fire from his lips. Burn the same driver.
Welcome, listeners, to Time for an Awakening on Black Talk Radio Network, New Media for the New Millennia. This is a history and current events program from a cultural perspective. We find this program necessary because Hosea 4:6 states, "My people are destroyed for the lack of knowledge." But we as a people can turn this around. Proverbs 4:7 states, "Wisdom is the principal thing. Therefore, get wisdom. With all you're getting, get an understanding." Again, welcome to the program this evening with your hosts, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. The number to reach us to join the conversation this evening is 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're streaming live at several locations. You can go to Time for anawakening.com, which is the homepage, and catch the live stream from that location. You can go to www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening. Again, that's www.blacktalkradionetwork.com/timeforanawakening and catch the live stream there also. You can go to ourradionetwork.com. Again, that's ourradionetwork.com. They broadcast out of the Black Belt and catch the live stream there. Or you can download TuneIn to any of your handheld devices. TuneIn is a free app. And in that TuneIn search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening. There you'll see the icon and you can stream the program live, even into your car if you have the Bluetooth capabilities or the auxiliary connection. Again, that's Time for an Awakening radio program with the live stream on the TuneIn app. Drop us an email at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Again, that's timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Time for an Awakening also has a fan page on Facebook. In that Facebook search engine, just type in Time for an Awakening radio program. There you always see interesting content being posted daily. And do me a favor, before you leave that page, just hit that like button. That's Time for an Awakening radio program with the fan page on Facebook, and Time for an Awakening Media is there. Always full of the latest podcasts of the various programs on Time for an Awakening. Interesting articles that you can read, download at later times, or share with your friends. And also check out that Time for an Awakening Marketplace and our partnership with the B.B. Toomey. Always interesting articles and items being put in the marketplace. African language classes, classes on education, economics, social systems, health, and much, much more being taught by professors on both the continent and in the diaspora. So make that one of your favorites. Put that in your address bar. That's timeforanawakening.com. Timeforanawakening.com will take you straight to Time for an Awakening Media. Tonight, we're scheduled to have a special guest join us, and I think he's waiting for us on the line. Documentary filmmaker and producer, Brother Jeremiah Kamara, is here to talk about a topic that we love to talk about on Time for an Awakening, the topic of religion. If you looked at the announcement of the program, and I'll just give it a little synopsis, there's a correlation between the number of churches in the Black community coexisting with poverty and powerlessness. We'll talk about this subject with our special guest this evening, Jeremiah Kamara. His movies include Contradiction and The Religious Roots of Racism in America. We'll be right back to get our program started after a brief word from our sponsors.
Mr. Moderator, our distinguished guests, brothers and sisters, our friends and our enemies. Everybody is here.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency and business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
Overworked? Suffering with an underperforming company, headache customer, staff, or vendors? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? We turned a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one transformation created for entrepreneurs like you in various industries around the country. Not what you're used to from accounting and business consulting? Well, welcome to New Business Solutions. If you're ready to go beyond advising, coaching, and training and get implemented results, call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions apply the best comprehensive administrative, accounting, operations, human resources, management, sales, and marketing to help you actualize your vision for yourself and your company. From anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072. Spelled new as in numerous on your device right now. Book your free consultation at newbusinesssolutions.com.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
From antiquity to the present, our people need to develop a new paradigm. It's time for an awakening. With your host, Brother Elliot, Sundays 7 p.m., Fridays at 8 p.m. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit us up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com. Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. And before we get started with our program this evening, I want to welcome in my co-host, Philadelphia activist and tour guide at the African American Museum here in Philadelphia at 7th and Arch Street, Brother Richard. Is with us, Brother Richard.
Yes, sir, Brother Elliot.
How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm doing fine. We had a little downpour here in Philadelphia, and then the temperature shot up. I don't know. People talk about global warming. I just don't know what's going on. But I'm enjoying when the temperature is up. Other than that, interesting weekend so far. And it's going to be an interesting conversation, I see.
Yeah, well, don't worry about it. The temperature will be dropping any day now, Richard. You better get your long johns and everything out. Yeah, I think this is going to be an interesting conversation this evening, Richard. We always have periodically people coming on to talk about this subject because of the symbiotic relationship that our people have with Christianity. You know, we've had a litany of historians on this program to let us know that the ancient history of our people, that we brought spirituality to the world and the understanding of supreme being or supreme beings, and which has led to a lot of these religions that we see. But it's something different that happened with our people when Arabs invaded the continent, and then later on when Europeans invaded the continent and brought our ancestors to this country. It was something that happened to our minds. It's always interesting when we can get people to do research and to look at this topic and do a little critical thinking and just look at it with an objective mind to see what has happened and what has crippled our people. Because if we sit back and look at this situation critically, we see that our people are crippled to a certain extent to pages in a book and to pastors in a pulpit. Let's look at this subject a little more deeper with our special guest, documentary filmmaker and producer, Brother Jeremiah Kamara is with us. Brother Kamara, are you there?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
How are you, sir?
I'm excellent. How are you? Thanks for having me.
I'm doing great, and I'm happy to have you on Time for Awakening with myself and Brother Richard.
How you doing there, brother?
I'm great, Brother Richard. How are you?
Great, great.
Brother Kamara, before we kind of go into different things, because you've produced several documentaries and small snippets, and they're on YouTube for some of our people that are not aware. You can go and punch up slave sermons, and it's several of them there, and several of them are interesting. I'll mention some of them in our conversation this evening. But before we kind of talk about the religious roots of racism in America and contradiction, because I want to approach it from that way, because I think it's some type of relationship with the latest documentary to our situation now. But before we do that, talk about yourself, Brother Kamara. What made you start looking at this from a critical eye and start assessing our situation in regards to religion and your background? Because I understand that that you were in seminary or theological school at one time. Talk about, give a little background before we kind of delve into the topic itself.
Okay, well, I actually was in seminary school after I had written books.
Okay.
I was interested in becoming a minister when I was living in Cleveland in my early 20s. I stayed with a preacher. I went to church, you know, 3-4 times a week, really into it. Had the lights off on Friday, just Friday evening to Saturday evening. And so I was really wanted to see what this whole phenomenon was. How do people speak in tongues? How are they moved so much? And so I was interested. I wanted that experience. I wanted to see what it was, you know, especially me not having a formal education, living in Cleveland, struggling, living outside and all this type of stuff. I needed some answers. And so a gentleman came to me and he asked me to come to church with him. And he talked about his preacher, how great he was. So I went to church and he preached for about, you know, an hour and a half. And I noticed that I had been hearing that since I was 5 years old. And so I started going to many other churches, heard the same thing. I wanted to learn, you know, but I was hearing the same thing. So I knew something was up. So I moved to Atlanta about 23, 24 years ago. I noticed the same phenomenon that was going on in the churches. In the north, it's not a felony if you don't go to church. But you come down south if you don't go to church, it's a felon. People would ask you what church you go to before they would ask you the name here in Atlanta. Church was huge business. And so I just felt like something had to be done, because church, in my opinion, was robbing us of our time. It's robbing us of our intelligence. And it definitely was robbing us of our money. I call it the Tim factor. And you know, we look around and we see what do we own? But yet, where were we today? We were in church. So I was invited to seminarian school after one of the professors had read my first book, Holy Lockdown. And I went for about 6 to 8 months because I wanted to see what they were teaching people. How were they preparing these college students for the world of ministry? And it just reinforced what I already knew. And that's what that was, that church is business. And it's big business. And most of these people, they weren't concerned academically so much. They were concerned about getting out of school and graduating, going out and opening up a church and making some money. It's a very quick hustle. Doesn't take a lot. All you need is a story to say how you were lifted. God brought you out of this and brought you out of that. Boom, you got a business. So that's a little bit about my background. I was, you know, went to church. My parents didn't really force it on me. We did go to church, but it wasn't something that was mandatory. Of course, my parents were believers and everything. And I pretty much have been this way since I was in my early 20s. That was some time ago. And I'm glad I did. It's a sense of freedom. And looking at things from the outside, you can really sense, really see what the problem is, taking another perspective.
Hey, Brother Kamara, now, you said that after you wrote your first book, that you were invited to go to seminary school. Now, I assume that the person that invited you to go wanted you to become a pastor.
No. Okay. No. Go ahead. No, not necessarily. He read the book. He was intrigued by the book. He didn't really have any arguments with the book.
Okay.
And so when I went to, we stopped in, his name was Robert Franklin. He was the former president of Morehouse here in Atlanta.
Okay.
And we stopped over in his office, and I looked on his shelving bookshelf, and he had my book on his shelf. And I was just taken aback. And he knew who I was. And he shook my hand. He said, great book. And so from that point on, I don't know if he did it or the other guy who introduced me to Robert Franklin did it. But somehow I got a call from one of the instructors there, one of the professors there, to come and just, you know, see what's going on, see what we're teaching. And one was about to retire. So I don't think he had any ideas of me becoming a preacher, because I've been invited to speak there twice. I've spoken there twice. This is a theological school. I'm totally the opposite of that. But, you know, when you're presenting information that is something that people can agree on and are not afraid of having cognitive dissonance after they hear it, it makes sense to talk about it. We're going to have to talk about it. We either talk about it now, or we're going to be in worse situations 10, 15 years from now. But one day we're going to have to talk about the church. There's a big elephant in the room, and we avoid it because this God has been on the do not talk about list, the do not question list, the church, the preacher, and all that stuff. Don't talk about the preacher. Don't you question God. That's got to stop. When you opened up your show today, you said belief. You said knowledge, you know, is, our people are lost because of lack of knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
But belief is not knowledge. Belief is just an acceptance that something that someone told you or something that you read is true.
Okay.
That's it. Yeah. And you said we need a new paradigm. We definitely need a new paradigm. It is time for Black people to evolve. We must expand our narrative. You know, when we talk about religion and the church's role and how it's affecting, you know, our people. It's devastating.
Your Brother Kamara, before I kind of go into the latest documentary, The Religious Roots of Racism in America, let me go back to your training at theological school. Now, I've never been to theological school and don't have a desire to go or to be a preacher. But I know, and I just want you to confirm this, that it is a way that they teach black potential pastors in theological school or seminary school, however you have its word properly worded, to get messages to black people. Is there a difference in what they're teaching, just say white potential pastors as opposed to black potential pastors?
What you're touching on is what they call the itching ear. They tell you in seminary, and this seminary school is interdenominational theological college. It's the largest black seminary school in the country. People come from all over the world to attend this particular school. It's right down the street from Morehouse and Spelman.
So
it's right in that, you know, college area.
So it's a black seminary school.
Yes, sir.
Okay, go ahead.
And,
go ahead.
And that's a good question, but I think what you're alluding to is what's called the itching ear. They tell you in seminary school, don't preach necessarily what the people want to hear or need to hear. I'm sorry. Teach what they want to hear. So this is why you have your sermons, you know, church lasting 3 hours. They keep repeating themselves. After they make a statement, you know, they say, y'all didn't hear me. I'm going to say it again. And then they walk. I'm going to say it to this side because you're wasting time. It's a game. You keep doing that. You keep talking about turning to your neighbor and all this kind of stuff. Listen, it's time to grow up. We have to expand. We have to become more intellectual. We have to grow as a people. And they keep you babies. You have this Bible. When do you graduate? You're reading the same stuff that you – when do you walk down the aisle? You know, they pretty much – encourage you to have problems, because if you don't have any problems, what good are they to you? People that are without and that are lacking go to obtain something. People that already have go to maintain something. But they don't want to change the landscape, because traditionally we've been taught that you know, we tried these intellectual preachers back in the, I think, the 40s, the 50s, the 60s. We tried them. And the people said, we don't want the learning. We want the burning. So we want someone that's going to push our emotional buttons and turn the meter up on our emotions and produce sweat and make us feel like we've attended church. But it's real funny, though, because after you come out of church, you ask them what they learned, you hear crickets from 99% of the people, just straight crickets, because it's not a teaching institution. It's an entertainment facility. And now you got people like Kanye West, who needs mental counseling. I think we all can agree on that.
Yeah.
He's young. So he doesn't really know anything, being young. He doesn't have the life tenure, but he's got the money. And now Joel Osteen is reaching out to him to bring that foolishness his way. And so every time you try to take a step forward, you got these big celebrities that are coming for spewing this ignorance to the people, and we take another step back. You know, it's a reason why Kanye West was invited to, you know, I don't know if he was invited or why Donald Trump was so tolerant of him, because he's a religious nut. And that's what the Republicans want. They want religious people, because Christianity is white supremacy. There's no other way that you can talk about it. When you talk about, you can't talk about racism without talking about white supremacy. And you can't talk about white supremacy without talking about Christianity. They are all one and the same. So when you're going to church and you're doing all this stuff, you're promoting white supremacy. That's not your story. It's not about your God that you had in Africa, because that God was inept, because it didn't keep you off that slave ship. Still came over. It's about humanism. At some point in time, we have to look each other in the eye and realize it's up to us. one another. When you have a function, the first thing black people do especially is say, let us pray. And when you do that, what you're doing is you're establishing a mindset that now expects godly intervention on a project that's entirely human. It's going to take human money. It's going to take human effort. It's going to take human sacrifice. It's going to take human intelligence. But we don't do that. We're very prayerful people. And if all of that worked, then why are we hovering on the bottom in so many areas of society?
Brother Cabrera, I mean, you... What you just said kind of opens up a lot of different ways we could take this conversation. What you said a minute ago, that Christianity is white supremacy and white supremacy is Christianity, is synonymous, is one and the same. I think that kind of opens up the door to the latest documentary, Religious Roots of Racism in America. In doing that, expand on what you said, because that was a statement that some people might find offensive, and I know that some of our listening audience might find it offensive. I hope they don't, because this is a conversation that has to be had. But open that up. Open that up for me.
Well, the film is entitled Holy Hierarchy. I was very surprised that the film became a finalist in the Los Angeles Liftoff Film Festival, so it's still up in the air as to what network is going to be on. But Holy Hierarchy, The Religious Roots of Racism in America, is a film that attempts to explain how during colonial America, the beliefs in a biased supreme being led to beliefs in supreme human beings. You see, because if you can believe in a supreme being, it's a seamless transition to believe in a supreme human being. And it deals with how these beliefs work their way into the legal system, ultimately turning racism into an institution. Racism and not slavery, okay, we tend to get it confused. The origins of enslavement was economics, not racism. Racism was a justification for slavery. We have to justify why we are doing this to this particular group. Why African people? Why them? Well, they're not really human. So we need to be able to sleep at night. So they're animals. And so they're, you know, they don't have the same feelings. One of the precepts during colonial time, precepts are general rules that teach people what to think about one another. Teach people, there's no penalty for breaking the rules, but it teaches people how to feel about another people. One of the most fundamental precepts during colonial times was that God made whites to be superior to everyone else, and he made blacks to be inferior, to be their servants. Some were made to rule, and some were made to serve. And so this is the origins of racism. It is the justification of enslavement. Racism is essentially the legal backing. That's what it is. When you talk about racism, you must put a legal component to it. Apartheid was a legal component. Jim Crow was a legal component. The prison industrial complex is a legal component. Racism is essentially the legal backing of a group's prejudices, superstitions, beliefs, stereotypes, biases, bigotry, and ignorance. So, when you back a group's prejudice and beliefs and stereotypes and what I just mentioned, it becomes racism. If you go out and you hit a black person or do something to a black walking down the street, that's not racism. That could be prejudice. That could be a hate crime. It becomes racism when they go to court and it's thrown out. No charges are brought against the perpetrator. That's what we're seeing with all the black-on-black crime. So you have a Christian component in there with racism. They're interwoven. It's the reason why the Ku Klux Klan, they had a million other items to burn, but they burned the cross. The Bible is the origin. I won't say the origin, but it is a pillar of white supremacy. It teaches you that differences need to be dealt with. In the Bible, this God tells you, I love Israel. I love this sea. You are my favorite. I have all kind of references in the film that shows this, how differences are to be dealt with. And, you know, you have a president who, in his own words, said that we're going to protect Christianity. Well, if you protect Christianity, you protect, you know, a way of life. You preserve white over non-white. Because most of this stuff takes place, I won't say most of it, but a great deal takes place in the way of imagery. You know, we are subjected to all type of images. Jesus is white. don't get it twisted. The reason he's white is because he's white in Walmart. It's the largest retailer on earth. He's white in CVS. He's white in Walgreens. He's white in Kroger's. He's white in Hobby Lobby. Doesn't matter what the reality is. It's the perception that matters. So we've all grown up and we've seen that white image. And no matter what your beliefs are, you still have that white image in your head. And we're still subjected to that on a daily basis, 24 hours a day. That should be illegal. And if there's nothing in the Constitution that will prevent us from being bombarded with white biblical imagery, white iconography, based off of the freedom of expression or the freedom of speech or the freedom of expression, then I think the Constitution is flawed. Most of the people that were, you know, around at that time were part of that Constitution on human beings in the first place. They came from a totally white perspective. So you cannot separate. They're interchangeable. They are inextricably connected. White supremacy, racism, and Christianity.
Before I turn the mic over to Brother Richard, I want to read this paragraph here because I think it relates to the conversation that we're getting ready to get into or that we're already into. It says, on July 30th, 1619, in the heat of Tidewater summer, Virginia's first governor, George Yeardley, convened an assembly of VIPs from the outlying settlement inside Jamestown New Wooden Church. The aim of the meeting was the creation of a new government, a basic judicial system to go by. The assembly met for 6 days, during which one representative died, but it would become the first meeting of the oldest continuous lawmaking body in the Western Hemisphere. Yeardley, who had been knighted by King James I, had returned to Jamestown after visiting Britain. He carried new instructions for the Virginia Company, which controlled the colony. Yeardley was to organize the colony into one body corporate and live equally under a new law for happily guiding the governed of the people that they were inhabiting. About 3 weeks later, a battered British privateer ship, fresh from a shootout with the Portuguese slave ship, anchored off Port Comfort, southeast of Jamestown, with a large cargo of people Yeardley's assembly did not consider. The White Lion, often misidentified as a Dutch ship, just ambushed the St. John the Baptist in the Gulf of Mexico. The latter ship was bound from West Africa port of Luanda with a cargo of 350 captives. So we see here that our ancestors arrived, according to this particular scenario, in Jamestown in 1619. You see the evolution of Christianity issue to our people, because in the beginnings, slaves weren't allowed to be Christians. I think in 1807, according to published reports, the first slave Bible was printed, and that was 3 years after the Haitian Revolution. After Nat Turner's rebellion, it was definite ways on how Christianity was supposed to be exposed and taught to black people. Charles Colquitt Jones, I think his name is Colquitt Jones, wrote The Religious Instruction of the Negroes in 1842. So it was always parameters and ways that this religion was supposed to be taught to black people. That is the message that Brother Kamara is trying to get across to our people this evening. Brother Richard, jump in here, because I know it's a lot of things you want to throw into the mix.
Well, you know, I'm just wanting to, and I appreciate the work that you're doing, brother, in the sense of bringing these points to light. One thing, and you said looking at things from the outside, and kind of thinking about our dialogue, I was considering to the other point that you're making about the reinforcing Christianity as European ceremony in a social, political, economic, and cultural sense. But I, looking from the outside, I just always want to emphasize that there is some of us like yourself and those here at Time for Awakening are looking at things from what I'm calling now an African civilization point of view. That means we're outside. We recognize Christianity because when we deal with the history of certain things, and then the European civilization point of view. And it seems that the Christian church in as a social structure reinforces the European civilization. And this is black Christians in general. And even may have my first question for you, you know, just for this dialogue, because it was interesting that you said that the preaching style, say, in the 1950s was more about learning, and the congregation somewhat rejected that. And I might be putting words in your mouth, compared to a preaching style that went to emotional gratification. What pieces of fact gave you that understanding of that transition? Because this leads to something that goes further back in history in my mind.
Right. Well, let me go back. Before I answer that question, I will. Let's go back to Virginia for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't think you could talk about racism in full without understanding Virginia. So I'm so glad you all mentioned
go ahead.
Virginia is the boss state of this country. People have moved away from Virginia, but they still have a Virginia mindset. Virginia is where racism was perfected and where it was institutionalized. Okay. Virginia had all the superstars. You know, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, Patrick Henry, and it's called the mother of presidents. It used to be called that because 7 out of the first 12 presidents were born in Virginia. 10 of the first 12 presidents owned human beings. And it's also the birthplace of American slavery.
Mm-hmm.
And America's status on race relations is largely due to where Virginia has led it. That's where the black codes were written. You know, it led to colonies and how Africans were to be treated. And, you know, they had many cases. And this is what my film is about, these various cases. But I'm not getting back to your question of we at first wanted to have the learning. I don't know, you know, I'm sure there are some books out there that talk about that. There's a book that we had to read in seminary school. I think it's called Black Theology. And the civil rights, I'm sorry, what was it? Black theology. I gotta go through it, but I don't necessarily mean that this is what we want. I think religion always had an emotional element to it. That was the only thing they gave us on the plantation. You know, you had white supervision, up until, what was it? Almost the mid-1800s. You had white supervision on the plantations. No blacks could preach without a white man sitting in there. They had to make sure that you were telling them the things that would continue to keep them enslaved and be happy to looking forward to there and then instead of the here and now. You know, when you talked about Virginia, I thought it was called the London Company. You said Virginia Company. But anyway, that's the same thing. When they placed this, when they came here, what was the first thing they did? They put that cross down. When they conquer people and these colonists go from place to place around the world, what's the first thing they do? They erect that cross. Why do they erect that cross? Well, they erect the cross because now we're getting ready to embark on what's called perversion. We're getting ready to pervert you, essentially. When you pervert someone or pervert anything, you're getting it to, you're altering it. So it's used other than how it's originally intended to be used. That's you know, that's a way of perverting something. And so we were perverted. Whatever beliefs that we have been perverted. Okay, our culture was perverted. I don't necessarily think that we had a time where church did not serve an emotional purpose. It did. Perhaps there was a time where we even needed the church. But there's an ancient proverb that says to insist on a spiritual practice that once, you know, led you or was once meaningful to you in the past, to continue to hold on to that is like crossing the river, but yet continuing to carry the raft on your back. We've crossed the river, but we're continuing to carry the raft on your back. You're still going to church, listening to the preacher tell you what you've been told since you were five. You're still doing that. You know, so people will say, well, we had our own system. They took our brand of religion. Listen, we're black people. We're the oldest people on earth. What didn't we create? What didn't we invent? What weren't we the original? What weren't we, you know, the original people of? Everything. They took your music. They took your spirituality or whatever name or title you want to put on that. You see that happening right now. So religion is no exception. But to say that Christianity is African, that's like you being, you know, in a train wreck. That body, and you know, they pull your body from the wreckage. You're beat up, you're hurt so badly that you're unidentified. You can't recognize that body anymore. That's over and done. But it is stupefying to me and others how a people could be so energetic in practicing a belief system that was forced on them by the same people that conquered. That is mind-boggling. That's mind-boggling. And other groups, they look at us as a poor imitation of themselves.
Wow.
the reason why I wanted to, you know, go there because, you know, and making that distinction, one, and I agree with you, as I see the especially during the colonial period. When you talk about those first generation of Africans, if they hadn't been in the Caribbean but shipped directly from the continent, the similarity of spiritual expression in a kind of emotional kind of way is African, is traditional in its way. But the differences that reinforces to what I hear you're saying, and I got to see some of the work of In Contradiction as far as the methodology of the preacher, but the point of that the institution of a church and the minister is not about generating power compared to emotional gratification. Now, I think in the write-up you mentioned how could so many churches be, and then we have this economic health, all these social indicators that relate to African people, and a church right there and not addressing it. Well, obviously it's not addressing it from the perspective of power. And the distinction I make is, you know, Elliot, we a couple of times we brought up about the after the Civil War, the ministers and leaders that were brought together. A lot of them were ministers, but they recognized that they were needed to, one, isolate themselves because of white, they would never be, you know, white hegemony, and two, that they demonstrated what they were able to achieve utilizing Christianity in the manner that they lead, because those social indicators, they bought land, they created educational systems. So I'm trying to make the distinction between those ministers, leaders, utilizing the preaching method of that time, recognizing that, you know, it comes out of this white hegemony experience, but they translated it for their use, compared to what we see now based off of the reflection of what's in our community. What is the distinction between them? And I'm saying one was about creating power and the other one's about emotional gratification. And do you see that?
All we had was the preachers. See, we could call them preachers. If we were not forced to do that and we had other options, they would have been scientists, they would have been teachers, they would have been engineers.
Yes.
They just happened to be preachers because that's all we had. That's the only place. Every other place, there's no other place but the church that made you feel like a man, because you weren't allowed anywhere else. So they were preachers that were did what they had to do, but they were preachers because they weren't allowed in any other realm of society. That's all you had. That's the only place where you were called Mr. Jones, Deacon Jones, Pastor Jones, Reverend Jones, instead of boy. It's the only place that you had where blacks had some sense of power and control over the institution. So I wouldn't really lift up the banner of being a preacher when that's all you could be in the first place. But these men were just doing what they had to do in order to change, you know, to help black people. We met during the so-called civil rights movement, we met in the churches. Where else were we going to meet? We met in two places. We met in people's houses, and we met in the church. Where else were we going to meet? We didn't have anywhere else. If you were a teacher or a preacher back in the day, that was the pinnacle of professions in the black community, be a preacher or a teacher. Things have changed. They've changed. But we're still holding, we still have the same reverence for a preacher than we had back in the, you know, 40s and 50s. Why? What'd they do? Ask a preacher, what can you do that I can't do? Where can you go that I can't go? What can you achieve that I can't achieve? What's so amazing about you that's not amazing about me? See, we love to say that God touched me and God talked to me and God touched my spirit, and, you know, because it gives our little existence here that's maybe so, I won't say mundane, but I don't know how exciting it is or whatever, but this really injects a dose of importance when you say that a God talked to you. You are really putting a, you know, a cap on your head with a lot of feathers. And so we compete with one another. You hear Christians talk, no, God talked to me. I listened to the Lord. And you want people to think that there's some entity talking to you. Listen, I play piano, okay? If I spent 30 minutes with, say, Herbie Hancock or Chick Corea, I will never be the same. Never. My playing would increase tenfold. If you talk to someone who knows everything, why are we so ignorant? Why are you so ignorant? You just claim that you talk to God, who knows the number of grains of sand on all the world's beaches combined, who knows the number of stars in the universe, who knows the numbers of hairs on your head, who's omniscient and omnipotent. How can an omnipotent entity visit you, but yet you're so powerless?
Does that place the responsibility on the minister and what they do? And when you make the reference that churches is as business, now, and if the minister is utilizing the structure of the institution of Black church as a business, and in a business in a European sense is supposed to be to benefit the owner, and in a sense the church minister, the preacher, he is the owner. And if he's gathering the resources, isn't that reinforcing that for the congregation to just be satisfied?
Absolutely.
Feeling
absolutely
good?
Absolutely. But it's also incumbent upon us to know better.
Yeah.
See, I mean, yeah, this pastor who you have assigned value to, who you have have a sense of reverence for. We did that. And, you know, when you look at the pastor in that way, and this pastor's running around, he's got these, you know, $2,000 or $3,000 suits on. He's getting his butt kissed all day, because who's going to disagree with him? Who's going to say, no, Pastor, you're wrong? He doesn't have those experiences. He gets his butt kissed all day. Everybody's a yes man. He's the pastor. He has God's cell phone number. It's a game. It's a
But isn't that a reflection, you know, to your point that the Christianity and the structure, a reflection of white hegemony? Here we are.
Yes. Absolutely.
Without no wealth. And we praise, some praise Donald Trump or those who are billionaires because they aspire to that, even though realistically
that's no right. But that's where the paradigm has to shift. We talked about this change in this new paradigm. Your new paradigm has got to stop aspiring to be like, you know, the people who have all the money. Well, how do we figure that's the greatest place to be? Bigger levels bring bigger devils. I know people with modest incomes that are very rich in their lives, knowledge-wise, health-wise. And I know people, I know millionaires too, that are in poor health, poor knowledge, haven't been anywhere. So that doesn't necessarily translate into a life of more importance, a life of more worth. Your value is in other people. When I look at my home, I am a valuable person because I value the people that are in my home and that are in my solar system, my wife, my children, my grandchild. So I'm rich. You know, if I become a multi-millionaire, whatever, that's icing on the cake. I would use that hopefully to do something more constructive. But, you know, getting on the case of these profits, P-R-O-F-I-T-S, you know, you look at them and you hold them up and you don't realize they're up because you look up to them. They're up because you paid them. Listen, one of our main problems in this life is problem solving. That is one of the main areas that we need to correct. Problem solving.
Now, Brother Camara, you're talking about black folks.
Black folks. Problem solving.
Now, let me say this, and I want you to throw some light on it or expand on it. I think, and this is my belief, I think the reason that our people have an issue with problem solving is because in their mind, God is going to do it all. He's going to come and handle everything. So might come with an idea that's very workable and very feasible, and people will look at you skeptical, or they'll hear you talking but won't join in, because in their mind, well, this guy don't really know anything. God's going to handle it.
Well, let me expound on that.
Go ahead.
Let me expound on that, okay? We have trouble problem solving, like you just said, because of expectations. But see, we have to understand that religion is harmful. Why? Because religion is misleading. It's like magic, okay, in the sense that we're misdirected. Religion creates a false reality that's driven by emotions, driven by music, driven by tradition, driven by fear, and not facts. So church basically teaches people that prayer and faith and belief and praise and worship are proven techniques that will bring about our desired results, that will solve our problems. Now, based upon the empirical evidence that's all around us, we clearly see that is not the truth. So misdirection is a close cousin of a lie. You can say, ask and ye shall receive. That is a lie. You can say that all your prayers have been answered. That is a lie. You are being disingenuous. That is what you call bias confirmation. You're biased. So when your so-called prayers are allegedly answered, if you bought a vacuum, let me say this: if you were looking to buy a vacuum cleaner, right, and you went on Amazon and you looked at all the reviews of this vacuum cleaner. And there were many people that were saying that, hey, sometimes it cut on, sometimes it didn't. But one time I had, guests in town. I really need to clean up the house, and this vacuum came on. You wouldn't say that vacuum cleaner is reliable. It's the same with your prayers. You mean to tell me you didn't pray that your son didn't get sent to prison? You didn't pray about that? You didn't pray that, you wouldn't get evicted, and you still got evicted. You wouldn't pray that man was going to stay with you, and he left you in the first place. Now, every time that your prayers are so-called unanswered, there's this excuse. Well, God knew best. Well, I mean, if he knew best, then why are you praying in the first place? See, this is what I'm saying. This is the whole thing. Okay, when I talk about perversion, this is it right here. It's perversion. Okay, so people tend to protect their beliefs. There's people listening to this right now. Oh, I'm sure their steam is coming out their ears hearing my voice. Okay, because they're protecting their beliefs because they have so much invested in it.
Yes.
Look how much time and how much money they put into it and how they've gone around with the Bible talking about it. Their pride is also involved in it. I've got a slave servant where I talk about the five reasons why people just can't let go of their faith. But we protect our beliefs and our ideology to the point that they completely omit the main elements that should be supporting their stance, and that's logic and reason and proof and evidence. When you compel someone to accept something without proof or evidence, to me, that's a form of mental abuse, because you have perverted the brain. And the only way that the brain can be perverted to such a degree that it's believing in things without proof is through consistent indoctrination, all preaching. It has to. That's why we have church every Sunday. We got it on Wednesday. We got it on Saturday, sometimes on Friday. It has to be consistently preached to you, because if you were to let the brain alone without any type of, you know, religious intervention, it would go back to its normal state. It's like Central Park. If you just left Central Park alone, Central Park is going to go right back to its normal. It would be a rainforest. You know, your brain would do the same thing.
But isn't the church, with all that you're saying being true, isn't it doing its function by not allowing, and the members doing its function, their function, by not allowing themselves to be empowered? I mean, isn't it? If we say we understand that style, the belief system was established to maintain white hegemony or white supremacy, then by not critically thinking, by not evaluating the benefit of the minister or preacher over the congregation, isn't it being effective and doing what it's supposed to do?
Absolutely. And it's taking your money. See, and so not only is it taking your money and doing exactly what it's intended to do, but think about it for a minute. You know, it lacks evidence and it lacks proof. So not only is the evidence and the proof lacking from Christianity, but the evidence is lacking in the people who practice Christianity. You can't look at another black person and say, oh man, look at them glowing. They are a Christian. Whoa, I know that person goes to church three times a week. You can't look at a person and tell that. You get the same thing everybody else does. You get arthritis too. You get high blood pressure. Your children are wayward. You graduate. You don't graduate. You're well. You're not well. You're going to get the same thing if everybody else does. If I walk outside and it's 72 degrees as a non-believer, it's going to be 72 degrees on you as well. It's called the vicissitudes of life. You are much more impacted by how you react to the things that happen to you are than the things that you hold, you know, believe is happening, or have the faith that somebody is going to rescue you and change you. Your brains are not capable of living in the there and then. We are here and now creatures. It's about right now. But you mentioned, is it the responsibility? Whose responsibility is it? It's the preacher's responsibility. It's our responsibility. We should know by now some of the ways that, you know, we're being conned. You know, if you have some life tenure on you, Brother Richard, Brother Elliot, your brain, you got to start thinking after a while. You got tenure. I can see if you're young, you know, you look at Kanye West promoting this, you know, slave religion and want us to go back to that. And they say that we're falling apart, you know, in schools because you took prayer out of it. Okay, what happened to the 9 people that were massacred in the church in Charleston? I'm sure certain that prayer was in there. Look at all the things and all the events that happen in church. Don't get me started on that. I've got a slave sermon. A lot of things happen in church. You got prayer in there. But we're not thinking, because the church tells you, don't think. Don't lean into your own understanding. That's crazy. So now watch this for a minute. Now check this out. You should know that you're being conned. I'm going to just name some basic. There are many reasons why. We're not going to even go in the Bible. okay? That was written by 100% men, okay? And because if the Bible was written by a woman, it'd be the mother, the daughter, and the Holy Spirit, okay? But first of all, the reason why you should know it's a con and why a light should go off in your brain is because it's not deed-based. It's belief-based. That should be, your whistle should be going off in your head. Why would anyone be more concerned with what I believe than what I do? I mean, you can be the best person in the world and you're going to hell. You know that's a con, because with belief comes you're now under oath. And when you become under oath, there are requirements of you. You must go to church. You have to pray. You have to worship. You have to have faith. You have to read the Bible. But most of all, you have to tithe. Because if all of this involved no money, you wouldn't see any churches on the corner. That's number one. It's not deed-based. Your life is more impacted by how I treat you, not what I believe. Friends have fallen out with me based off of what I don't believe. But you forgot about the $500 that I loaned you. I hope that friend is listening. I really do, because he was a real fervent believer and tither of Eddie Long's church, to the point where he got evicted from his home. Okay, so but you won't speak to me because of what I believe, what I don't believe, not about what I do. That's where you know it's a con. You know it's man involved in that, because they need you on their side so they can get certain things. Number two, and there are many, I'm not necessarily going in order, no matter what you do, you can ask for forgiveness. I don't care if you go in and take a AR-15 and shoot up the place, or you kill 100 people, 200 people, whatever. You can just ask for forgiveness. Now, here is this European came into Africa, stole your gold, stole your land, stole your people, stole your culture. But there's no, according to Christianity, you can just, God, I'm a sinner. Welcome, let me come into your world, come into my heart. Confess with your mouth, believe that Jesus died for me, and Allah, boom, magic, abracadabra, I'm forgiven. That's a con, because there's no provisions in there to give back what you stole.
Now, let me jump in here a second, Brother Gamara, and we're in conversation this evening with documentary filmmaker, producer, Jeremiah Gamara. The two ones in particular we're talking about is contradiction and the religious roots of racism in America. We're going to take a break in about 10 minutes, and then I want some of the callers to get involved. Before we take that break, because what I wanted to say is what you just stated. Our people, I don't care what's going on, and you have I wouldn't say rash. You have police killings happening in almost every city and small town in this country, or some type of violence against black folks. And one thing that the media always shows, and they make sure they show it, like they showed it during that Amber Geiger decision or verdict, is black people. Yeah, is black people forgiving white folks, no matter what they do. You come in your house and kill your son. He's watching Netflix and eating a bowl of ice cream, and you come in there with no apparent reason and just gun him down.
Not let me see your hands.
Nothing.
Let me see your hands. Get on the floor where I can see your hands. Call backup. None of
nothing.
That.
You gave the example of going into a church when people are in there praying, including the pastor, and a white guy goes in there and just guns 9 people down, and the people were ready to forgive him. Let me read this, and I just want to read these 4 passages, because I believe that this psychological damage that was instituted back during our enslavement keeps regenerating ourselves in the minds of our people. I think these four passages, our relationship with Europeans here hinges on these four passages that was taught to our ancestors, and I'm going to read them. Because we just read that this guy, George Yeardley, who was knighted by King James, established that Virginia colony. And it's kind of ironic that all black folks generally, their book of choice or their book that's, that's on their coffee table or in a sacred place in their home is a King James Bible. Let me read these four passages, and then we'll take a break and come back, and I want the folks to get on the phone. Colossians, Jesus, these are King James verses, and I believe that our relationship with Europeans is steeped in these four passages and regenerates ourselves in the behavior, the psychological damage that was done to our people. Colossians 3:22, servants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service as men pleasers, but in singleness of heart, fearing God. And whatsoever ye do, do it heartily as the Lord and not unto men, knowing that the Lord ye serve will reward you with an inheritance because you serve the Lord Christ. Ephesians 6:5, servants, be obedient to them who are your masters with fear and trembling and singleness of heart as unto Christ, not with eye service, but as servants of Christ doing the will of God in your heart. Titus 2:9, exhort servants to be obedient to their own masters and to please them in all things, not answering back, not prolonging, but showing all good fidelity that they may adorn the doctrine of God, our Savior, in all things. And this last one is 1 Timothy 6:1. Let as many servants that are under the yoke count their own masters worthy of all honor, that the name of God and his doctrine be not blasphemed. They that have believing masters, let them despise them not, because they are your brethren, but rather do them service, because they are faithful and beloved partakers of the benefit. These things teach and exhort. These four passages have done more damage to our people and still doing damage. And that's my belief. Before we take a break, Brother Kamara, speak to that.
Absolutely. I mean, that is it. But listen, if you did not know these passages, they're on autopilot anyway.
Oh, wow. Okay. All right.
You know, they're on autopilot. So there are people who don't read the Bible. I mean, you know, I'm sure there may be some callers that call up and say, do you believe in God? And I always put the article, the or in front of that. Because if you ask me, do I believe in God, you're implying that there is one. And that whole monotheism was definitely is a new thing. Mono is a new thing on the block to have one. Most cultures had many. But this, you know, India alone has 33 million. You know, so when you narrow it to one, I mean, you know that there's a entity, a group, okay, some Catholic priests and perverted priests and bishops in the Vatican behind that, wanting you to get on the same page so they can control you. That's what church stands for. Church, controlling humanity under Roman Catholic hierarchy.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, I'd like you to get on the phone and ask some questions to our guests, and you can do that by dialing 215-490-9832. That's 215-490-9832. We're in conversation with documentary filmmaker and producer Jeremiah Kamara. We'll be right back.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening. Time for an Awakening. With host Brother Elliot and Brother Richard on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
All Insurance Incorporated, an African-American owned and operated insurance agency in business for over 20 years, located at 231 Southeastern Road in Glenside, PA, with other offices in Germantown and West Philadelphia. Call now for commercial insurance quotes, homeowners insurance quotes, automobile insurance quotes, notary and tax services, representing over 15 major A-rated insurance companies, offering a discount on all notary services when you call in for a free quote. Call this number, 215-885-2444. That number is 215-885-2444. 215-885-2444. All Insurance Incorporated.
Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley. Dooley Brothers, specializing in shingle, rubber roofs, gutters, downspouts, and vinyl sidings. Call for your free estimate today. 215-224-3882. That's 215-224-3882. Dooley Brothers Roofing, the roofing experts you can trust. That number again, 215-224-3882. 215-224-3882. Before your roof becomes unruly, call Dooley.
I transformed a $24,000 a year odd job handyman service into a seven-figure high-end custom home builder and commercial contractor licensed and operating in three states. This is just one of the tangible transformations I've created for entrepreneurs in various industries around the country. If this isn't what you think of when you think of accounting and business consulting, then get ready to take down this invaluable information. Are you an entrepreneur suffering with a stagnating company? Have headache customers, staff, or vendors? Are you rebounding from a loss and need help achieving your unrealized potential? Or are you a startup who wants to get it right the first time and avoid the costly mistakes? Hi, my name is Nataki Kanban. If you're ready to go beyond advising and coaching and get results, then call 301-244-9072. Let New Business Solutions recommend and implement the best comprehensive sales, administrative, human resources, accounting, and operations to help you grow into your vision for yourself and your company. Again, from anywhere nationally, call 301-244-9072 or pull us up on your device right now and book your free consultation at www.newbusinesssolutions.com. And just mention you heard this special announcement on Time for an Awakening.
RG Electrical Inspections provides electrical inspections for realtors, licensed electricians, and homeowners. Licensed and insured underwriter, serving Philadelphia and surrounding area. Call today, 484-268-9837.
I must be measured by my soul. The mind is the standard of the man. With this new sense of dignity and this new sense of self-respect, a new Negro came into being with a new determination to suffer, to struggle, to sacrifice, and even to die if necessary in order to be free.
Hang on to the world as it spins around.
All our people. Righteous by nature, wicked by circumstance, so we are going to try to save our people. Take control of our communities. Anybody that wants justice, come out of those parties that won't give you justice, and let's have a justice party and set up our own candidates, run them in the cities. Take down the weak, blood suckers of the poor, and cast them out, and set up people that will fight for justice for us.
Because there's a whole lot of illusions about Africa's relationship with other people in the world.
There's a whole lot of illusion about our relationship to the religions in the world. And these belief systems that had its origin in Africa, all of them, and there is no exception, turned on African people. I said there is no exception. And there's one thing you have to get through your mind and keep it. Nothing that ever came from the European mind was meant to do anything but facilitate European domination of the world. And I said, there's no exception. Everything that was brought into this continent, everything, every idea, every so-called religion, was meant to dominate and to control. The Arabs had no illusions about it. The Europeans had no illusions about it. You were the ones with the illusions. And yet every element that went into the making of every major religion in the world started in Africa. Why is it that you are so naive? You let people redress something that you invented, sell it back to you, and enslave you through it.
If we are to defeat the European, if we are to master this earth and take back this earth from the European, then we must outthink the European. We must then be creative. That puts the learning emphasis on the how-ness, the how to think as such, and to the use of knowledge as a tool of mastery. It's a very different kind of thing. As a result, you see, the control and the paternalism of Europeans over black people. You see, the other thing that we must recognize, even if the European becomes good and nice and accepts us and so forth, the fact that he would still be in control creates a what we might call a benevolent paternalism, which still to a great degree helps to maintain this passive mode of thinking and this passive mode of knowledge.
Welcome back to Time for an Awakening. It's 8:28 in the city of Philadelphia. We're joined in conversation with documentary filmmaker and producer Jeremiah Kamara. You can get involved in the conversation, too, by dialing 215-490-9832. It's 215-490-9832. I know this is a subject that some folks might not like, but it needs to be talked about. And I hope you get involved and ask some questions, make some comments, and use that number of 215-490-9832. Brother Kamara, well, wait a minute. Before I go on, let me take this. Let's go to 602. 602?
Yes, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Good evening. And good evening to your guest, Brother Kamara. This is Brother Marcus from Memphis.
How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, good brothers. You know, Dr. Kamara, Brother Kamara, you are a breath of fresh air. Because this is the subject that we don't want to talk about. See, this is religion. You see, divine adjudication is a fallacy. You know, but our people, they don't want to embrace it, you know. Today, I saw something a brother said. He said, you know, God should lead by example and give the devil forgiveness. You see, because they are always telling us to forgive. But God, he can't forgive the devil. You know, it's a bunch of foolishness. It's all mythology and allegory. You see what I'm saying? And that, it has kept our people in a frozen psychological state. Because we don't want to do any type of critical thinking at all. You know, it's sad. It's real sad. But I admire what you're saying, brother, because this is a subject we don't want to touch. You know, a couple of weeks ago, Brother Elliot brought up the thing about this guy and the network, TV network. What do you call that network?
The word network.
Word.
That a lot
yes,
of our people
the word
watching.
Network. Mm-hmm. Yes. And you can't hear crickets, brother. Negroes ain't saying nothing. These preachers, Not even the congregants saying anything. Everybody is silent. You know,
right. It doesn't take much to be a pastor. Believe me, the reverence is unwarranted. I could go online and get ordained in about a half an hour. It's gonna cost me about $35-$40.
That's why
it doesn't cost. And all I can do, I could tell the people, you know, listen. We all have a story, man. We all have a story. You know, people want to talk about why they're so committed to God. I'm gonna tell you, I know God is real because you're gonna bring up
delivered.
Some,
yes,
right. He delivered. Yep. You're gonna bring up some personal. We all have stories.
Exactly.
I can tell you some amazing stories about myself. It's just called life. Exactly. Life has some amazing things that happen in it. It just is what it is.
Hey, you know, I am down here in Memphis, brother, in the buckle of the belt down here. This is the buckle right here. Every corner is a church. Every nook and cranny, every little storefront, somebody got a church going. It's a pimp game. But, brother, we appreciate what you're doing. Keep on keeping on. Thank you.
Thank you for your call, sir. Let's go to 267. 267?
Hey, good evening, Brother Elliot and Brother Richard and Brother Kamar. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah, you know, it is like a breath of fresh air. And Brother Kamar, what my turning point was when I heard a person call into a Black radio station. I was actually very religious minded at the time. And I heard a guy calling the Black radio station say, how could he worship a God that is dragged through the streets and killed by the Romans? You know, and I said, man, that right there made a lot of sense to me. And also, you know, this thing goes much deeper than what you guys are even, because there was a video that I sent to Elliot today, and I also sent a couple of videos to, you know, some of my friends, you know, and they agreed with everything this brother said about the Black church, the pastors, what the calling means. The calling means that I want to get called so I can proceed, so I can get some of the same benefits that this pastor's getting. I want the car that I don't have to work for, and I want the money and the prestige. So that's the calling that they want for, and everybody agreed with me. So I asked them, what are you going to do today? Oh, we're going to church. So even when the truth is right in these people's faces, man, you know, they still are addicted to going to that building, giving up 10% of their gross because these devils are so greedy. That they, you know, they tell them like, no, Uncle Sam get his before you get yours. So God should get his, and God meaning himself, you know. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I try, you know, and I discussed it. Well, Elliot actually brought it to my attention the other night. A guy was asking me to attend his church function, and, you know, I'm not I try not to be, you know, condescending or anything like that. And I told, you know, I said, well, what is your church doing in the community? How is it helping the community? Oh, we're doing a lot of things, he says. And he said, like, you know, why don't you come? And I said, nah, that's all right, you know, because I have a police system. And he said, well, what is that? And I had to tell him. I said, it's personal. Because I hear these people running around all the time talking about they have a personal relationship with Jesus, yet it ain't so personal. So, you know, I had to let this brother know, like, look, it's personal. My belief is my belief, and I'll give it up if it stops working for me, you know. So, you know, I just want, and I have my own, you know, like I'm reading a book right now, and it's called The Odu Ifa, you know. And since I found out through my genetic makeup that I have Yoruba, I said, well, let me go and find out what my people studied over 5,000 years ago or whatever. Let me find that out. You know what I mean? But that's just for me. That's my personal belief. I don't push it on nobody else or whatever. I read what works for me. So I just wanted some feedback on everything I just said to you, brother. And I've seen all, I think I've seen like 50 episodes of Slave Sermons, and I enjoy just about every one of them. You know what I mean? So I just wanted to get some feedback from you, brother,
okay.
Of what
okay.
I discussed with you tonight.
All right. Appreciate you calling, brother. Brother Richard and Brother Elliot, can I respond?
Oh, certainly.
You make a good point, brother, when you say personal. You know, if you believe that there's a guy watching you and it's 8 billion people and he's concerned about you having sex before you got a piece of paper or cussing, or he's upset about the most minor offenses, you know, and you believe this guy had a son born of a virgin, and there's a hell and there's a heaven. Please keep that personal. that belongs, you keep that to yourself, because you're insane. Because religion is the acceptable insanity, because it's shared by so many people. If you were the only one who believe that stuff, you would be, someone would commit you to a mental institution. But because that's shared by so many people, you're okay. But I want to get back, to another point you talked about. You've tried to introduce people. You passed the video around, like you said. The biggest obstacle is fear. Number one is his and shoulders above everything else. And it's so crazy. It's because you have men. You know, my father told me, he said, man, you know, sometimes, he said, when you're afraid, you got to put your fear aside and just do your job. As men, I'm not, as a man, I am not really, The message in the church doesn't really hit home to me, doesn't appeal to me. I can't seek shelter from the storm. I am a man. I have to go in the eye of the storm sometimes. I can't lay my head in the lap of Jesus. You know how crazy that sounds? As a man? No. I've got to roll my sleeves up, put my boots on, and get out here and make it happen. Can't be on my knees like that. I got to get up and make it happen. These men that are so afraid, it's just overwhelming. The other thing is pride. You got a lot of these people, they read the Bible.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
They read the Bible, and they study this. And when you talk to them, they know that you're making sense, but their pride just won't let them,
right.
Won't allow them to admit. The other thing is a God void. Well, what do we worship now? Who are we going to turn to now? See, that's a slave question. Why don't you have faith? Why don't each other? It's about humanism. Why don't you have faith in those things that have showed themselves faithful? You got friends that have shown themselves loyal and faithful to you. The sun has showed itself to be very faithful. I have faith that the sun's going to rise tomorrow morning. I have faith that nighttime is going to come tomorrow evening. I have faith that this winter is going to bring cold weather, et cetera. The other thing is separation anxiety. You're away from your pastor. You're away from the people at the church, and you miss them. Listen, the people that will gravitate you based off of the law of attraction will be your true soulmates. Like, my life now is centered with people of like minds. I didn't go out deliberately looking for these people, but that which is likened unto itself will be attracted. The last thing, not well, these are the five main things that keep people glued to their beliefs, is betrayal. You have a sense of betrayal. Oh, man, my uncle's the deacon. My father is the pastor. This is my grandfather, church, and when he died, my father took... So, if Miles Davis came back and we were still stuck on playing and saying, he would be like, what, y'all haven't evolved? Your grandfather would want you to evolve. He told you what he thought was the truth at his time. He told you the truth, even though what he told you wasn't true. I know that sounds kind of twisted, but it was the truth according to what the information that he possessed at the time. You see? I want to just mention something, if I may.
Go ahead.
About this God. Oh, you don't know about this God. This God is a healer. Oh, this God is a provider. I know God is real based off of what he done for me. Now, you know, think about what you just said for a minute. That's something we don't do. Don't think. Now, we hire security for our businesses. We install Ring devices at our front doors to prevent things from happening. But this God is promoted as a healer and a provider. But people are affected by what happens to them. If gods were truly real, then their greatest service to humanity would be in the realm of prevention, not providing. Why you allow me to have a stroke in the first damn place? Why do you allow the hurricane to wreak havoc through my community in the first place? Why you thanking God? Oh man, it was two people died in the car accident, but I'm blessed. I just broke my leg, but why did God allow the accident in the first place? This is the other reason why you know it's a con. Religion is a con because there's no preventative measures. I don't care. You know how many accidents have happened with the Bible in the back seat, backing that back window, collecting dust? You know how many bad things happen? The jails are not filled with people who don't believe. Jails are not filled with atheists.
They sure
are. The funeral homes are not filled with non-believers. Things are going to happen to you. I don't give a damn what you believe, or not believe. It's called life. Okay? There's nothing that shines in you that makes me want to be like you. So, and then, you know, you give 10%. He brought up, the caller brought up the 10%, the money. It's a damn shame. $420 billion. I can't even hardly get that out. Since 1980. I mean, that is enough money for 40 million people to have anything we want. Not to be struggling for anything.
Transform these communities. Yes.
Transform every. But you give 10%. Let me tell you what would be the wisest investment, in my opinion, with that 10%. That 10% should go to your child's tutor. Invest in the future. You know that child is struggling in school with math, with science. You know he is, and you are unable to help him out because you don't have the knowledge to accommodate him or her.
Brother Jeremiah,
save 10% of your money for a tutor to keep your child above the average and to graduate. and the gift knowledge. That's where your power is. Knowledge is not power. Knowledge is potential power.
But Brother Jeremiah, what they'll do, instead of investing that 10% in their child's education, they'll take that poor child up there to the pastor and let him lay his greasy hands on him. You know,
all day.
I mean, all day. And see, that's the foolishness that I
right.
know our people see, yet they're trapped in this. And that's why we live in these slums. We don't have enough food to get through the week. And these pimps are riding through the neighborhood in their Bentleys. And, you know,
I went to Philadelphia. Where you all are, Philadelphia?
Mm-hmm.
In my film, Holy Hierarchy, I have Dr. Molefi Asante out of Temple. I've been to every major city in the United States. I've never seen some of the conditions that I saw in West Philadelphia. I mean, I thought St. Louis and Baltimore was bad. But what I saw in West Philadelphia, it took on a whole new meaning.
And there's worse areas for that.
Yeah, yeah. You saying West Philly is bad? Wow. And I live here.
I think it was West, because I went and picked a friend of mine that I grew up with, and we went and had lunch. I think it was West Philadelphia, but I just could not believe. I could believe it. But then there were churches all around. Like, you don't even encourage the able-bodied members of your church to get out and pick the damn trash up. You know, there's this theory. It's called the broken window theory. Excuse me. You ever go into a person's home and the bathroom is so immaculately clean and spotless? That is men, you know how we do. We lift the seat, we tinkle a little bit. You ever get a piece of tissue and wipe that part up because it's so clean? Or you wash your hands, you got water that's flat, you take a paper towel, you wipe it up. That's what you do in cleanliness. Cleanliness begets cleanliness. But where there's filth, it's inviting. Filth begets more filth. One broken window begets more broken windows. You know you're in a black neighborhood. Not all. There are some nice neighborhoods, especially here in Atlanta. But I'm generalizing. You know you're in a black neighborhood. You see three things. You see litter. Were you that sorry? You that holy? You love God, but you're throwing stuff out the window of your car. I see it all the time. But you're a churchgoer. You're a believer, but you're throwing stuff outside. The other thing is you see churches, and then you see liquor stores. There ain't much difference between liquor stores and churches in the first place. They all get you high. They all pervert your brain. And they all cause psychological damage.
Brother, thank you for your call, man.
All right, brother.
Right.
Y'all take care. All right.
Let's grab another call here. Let's go to 647.
Hello?
Yes.
Oh, am I on?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Elliot, and all you brothers, thank you. I have a statement and then I have a question. My sister tells me the story that she went to church one time and my mother put, I think, $5 in the plate. So the preacher called her out because she only gave $5. And my father, being the type of guy he was, basically told her that, you know, it's on you. But if you want to go back to church, you can go. But if you don't want to go back to church, that's fine with me, too. You know, it's your choice. But he wasn't into the religion thing at all. But the question I have is Christianity, Islam, and both of those religions enslaved African people. But I wanted to get the brother's thoughts on traditional African religions, the Yoruba religion. My grandmother's name was Olame. I know those are two Yoruba names. Like, what are your thoughts on, and a brother from Philadelphia, I think his name was George Ware, Owusu, he became at the head of the whole African spiritual movement in North America. He used to be the executive director of the Black Music Association. He was a mathematician, and I think Owusu was a mathematician, but he was from, I think he was born in Alabama. So I just basically want to get your thoughts on traditional African religions.
Okay, I'm not an expert. I am not the guest to speak on that. I'm too ignorant on that subject. I do know, I do think that if there's any tradition in so-called religion or spirituality that is not heavily dependent upon humans, I don't know how effective it can be. Because in the long run, that's all you got. You got each other.
Mm-hmm.
We had traditional religions that did not keep us off that slave ship. No God kept us off of there. So you got parts of Africa that, you know, are in dire straits. If they're heavily religious, they may be practicing traditional religions. If you're leaning on an entity outside of yourself and other human beings to fix your problem, I don't care what it is, it's flawed. There's no genies going to come out of bottle. No savior's going to come out of book.
So you don't believe in abracadabra, hocus pocus, that's what you're saying.
I'm saying this. This is what I said. If they're religions, and I'm not an expert on that, but I think my thoughts are that religions must be centered on human beings because it's not magical. You can pray till the cows come home. Until you get people working together, there's not much that's going to happen. But in terms of expounding upon the history of traditional religions in Africa, I am not the guest for that.
I got you. Thank you.
Brother, thank you for your contribution. Let's go to 414. 414? 414, are you there? 414, are you there? Let's put them back on hold. They might have stepped away. Let's go to 626. 626? Let's put them on hold. Maybe he didn't step away because I hear him. Brother Kamara, with the time that we have, Richard, go ahead, because I know you might want to hit a few more things before we
start winding things down. I understand totally what Brother Kamara was saying in relationship to, you know, the belief and when it doesn't serve your outcome. And I'm as I said in the beginning, because I kind of look at it from as an outsider, you know. So the question of, since the Christian church is serving its function, and it has had amongst American Africans particularly, is it has its resistance to the function of serving white supremacy or white hegemony. I think, you know, again, in historical context, David Walker, who, you know, in his pamphlet was speaking to Christians, but he definitely was in speaking from the perspective of just being, as I hear, to get emotional gratification. He did, you know, was thinking critically, and he was challenging us to, you know, move to our freedom at the same time, questioning white folks, if you really believe in this here belief that you say that you're giving to us, then, you know, obviously you're not serving well its purpose. So I kind of, you know, and that's when I looked at your
about contradiction, even that there's a lot of contradiction. But I recognize that now, as everyone saying, that the Christian church is not serving the community or its members.
No,
that is a minister thing. Right.
Right. It's an individual. And at the language. Mm. Look at the language. I'm blessed. Mm. I'm blessed. My personal relationship. My individual salvation. So these pimps are pastors. Right. The prophets, you know, where they say you're going to get blessed financially.
Mm-hmm.
You couldn't preach this same financial blessing. What's the word I'm looking for? The type of ministry that you
have. Prosperity
gospel. Mm-hmm. This is not a prosperity gospel. It's an American gospel.
Which is a prosperity gospel.
That's right. There you go. Because you could not take this same message to Haiti, okay, and expect the Haitians to arise economically like you can here in this country. It's an American gospel. So you got tricked and bought this pastor Creflo Dollar, which is one hell of a name for a pastor, for a pimp. You bought him a jet. He wanted $65 million. I think he wound up getting $70 million to go indoctrinate other black folk brains in different parts of the world in the street where your church is in Atlanta, Georgia, is ragged. I mean, you cannot. There is no justification for that. Do you know what I don't want $65 million so I can improve the quality and conditions of my surrounding area. So I can bring schools. Let's build a hospital. Let's build a health center. I need a jet. And we did it. That's not the worst part. The worst part is there will be people that justify it.
Yeah,
that's where you know that we're crazy. We have been brainwashed. People that are brainwashed, Brother Richard, Brother Elliot, they don't know they're brainwashed. When you're brainwashed, you don't realize that.
Well, Brother Camaro, listen, a couple of things before we start winding things down. I talk with people all the time in my place of business, and some of them talk about, my pastor's getting older. He wants to step away. The deacon board or whoever, trustees, we're looking for another pastor. And a lot of times they bring people from out of town. And I'm just curious, where do they get these guys? I mean, you see these guys pop up. I'll tell you this. This is just a personal story. I was doing business in a section that's outside of Philadelphia, and a pastor was there at the time that used to come in the place of business. He brought a friend of his in, and this friend happened to be a fellow pastor from out of town. Now, he was from out of town. I think he was from Atlanta, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. But this guy happened to be the guy that's over a mega church here in Philadelphia. At the time, he was new in town. This guy's named Waller. He was a customer in my place of business at the time. I didn't know who he was, but he was from out of town. Where do they, is it some type of way to explain this to me? Because you were in seminary.
Yes, it is.
Go ahead.
Yes, it is. They went and got a pastor named Jamal Harrison. If I'm not mistaken, and I say they, I'm here in Atlanta, let me explain. When Eddie Long died, New Birth Missionary Baptist Church was a big mega church here. Okay. Had a lot of highfalutin black folk that went to that church. When Eddie Long died, they struggled. They got a one pastor named Stephen Davis. I don't think he had the fervor and the flavor and the edge to, you know, the popularity that they were looking for. So they went and got a pastor from, I think, if I'm, and I could be wrong, but I think he was from Baltimore. This pastor studied in Oxford. He's a black guy. His name is Bryant. What was his first name? Jamal Bryant.
Oh.
Jamal Harrison Bryant.
Okay.
Right. Big guy. Okay. So they came and got him because they want somebody, you know, that's popular. This is Atlanta. You know, keep up with the Joneses. Look good while you're doing it, irrespective of if you own it. But the way that they recruit pastors, and I'm saying they, I'm talking about how these ministers, a lot of them are found and discovered, is no different than sports. How did they discover LeBron? They discover him whipping tail at his high school in Akron. How did they discover T.D. Jakes? T.D. Jakes, they used to call him little preacher boy, little pastor boy, something like that, in his hometown. When these preachers go to Azusa Street Revival, I think it used to be in Oklahoma. I don't know if it's still there. I think it started in Los Angeles, Oklahoma. There's a street called Azusa. Well, it used to be in Los Angeles, and they call it the Azusa Street Rally. You got white folks that are there recruiting, and they see the charismatic preachers that are there that they believe that can really generate some money. See, because before any black pastor gets paid, trust me, these white organizations get the money first. They're up under them, like Kenneth Hagin. I think it's Kenneth Hagin. I always want to say Hagin instead of Copeland. I think it's Kenneth Hagin. He's over Creflo Dollar. No, Kenneth Copeland. I'm sorry. Kenneth Copeland. That's him. Creflo Dollar said, "This is my spiritual advisor. It's my spiritual daddy, I mean." Kenneth Copeland, Benny Hinn, Joel Osteen. A lot of these white ministers are getting money off of the black churches. I can't name them all, but I know that they're up under them. I think Oral Roberts was over New Birth Missionary Baptist Church where Eddie Long went. You got all these pastors. And there was a guy named Mark Hanby. He taught them how to pimp. From Kenneth Hagin to Jesse Duplantis, who's also a pimp, Joyce Myers, who's a female pimp, T.D. Jakes, Joel Osteen, Benny Hinn. I go on and on. They're all pimps.
Now wait a minute. You said Azusa Street. Now, I'm going to use a sports analogy because they have these NFL combines, and they have, I think they have it in Chicago.
There you where go.
Where they have players come out and play in Chicago.
There you go.
So you mean to tell me
how they can jump, how loud they can preach, how they can jump on the stage? Exactly. It's a combine. They got a combine for preachers.
Okay. All right.
They have a combine for preachers. That's right. Now check this out. Kanye West is a can you hear me?
Mm-hmm. I hear you.
Because I just relocated to another spot. But Kanye West, he's already displayed his hooping and hollering. You know what he could do. So Joel Osteen is attracted to him.
Wow.
If Kanye West was just some average joker, you know, preaching the same thing but didn't have the name behind him, do you think Joel Osteen would be interested in him? No. Joel Osteen is interested in Kanye West because Kanye West is popular and he can bring the money. And that's what they're for. Kanye West is there to bring more cash. This is the same preacher, Joel Osteen, who lied to the people in Houston when the storm hit in Houston and lied and said it was flooded. Caught him in two or three lies. But he didn't want those stinking, nasty, sweaty, muddy people in his clean, pristine, multi-million-dollar facility. That's all it was. And all this guy does is get up and tell stories. He should be a motivational speaker. You know, just do what, what's the big guy, the big, tall, white guy, Anthony Robbins. Just do what he does and be a motivational speaker. That's how much you talk about the Bible, you know, Mr. Joel Osteen. Joyce Myers walks around like she owns the city of St. Louis. Like she actually has a cell phone number of this God who's in heaven. It is unbelievably sinister and crazy how they have got us mesmerized. But I go back to it. Do not discount the act of perversion that is beset upon the black brain. We say that prevention is worth a pound of cure. You can get every black person who, you know, who's familiar with that to agree. Prevention is worth a pound of cure. You got a guy that can't stop bullets, can't stop the crime in Chicago, can't stop the crimes in Memphis. He's not in that realm. He's a provider, so you say. This guy would be best served as a preventer. I'm going to prevent black people from being enslaved. See, if he was a preventer, then the Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria would have sank. If he was a preventer, we'd have never had chattel slavery in the first place, because he'd have prevented it. He'd have made sure that first slave ship called the good ship Jesus did not make it and none other ones made it. That's a God that you serve, a God that you that can stop bullets, not a God that will afflict you and you say, I'm grateful to God, though I'm still alive. That's insane. Your brain has been perverted. In other words, your brain is now have been altered, and it is now on a course that was not intended for it to be on. You have altered your brain's natural function.
Let me grab our last caller. Let's go to Newport News. Newport News.
Oh my comrade. I'm gonna start this off with something kind of radical.
Wait a minute! I think you're on a hands free. Can you get closer? Can you get closer? I can't hear you. Can you get closer? You must be on a hands free.
Dial in right quick on the phone.
Go ahead. Ask your question if you can't. Go ahead.
I was gonna say to this brother, I appreciate the guest. And all I'm going to say to you is hemp, pastors, and prostitutes. I mean, hemp, pastors, and politicians. It sounds like I named three categories, but actually I gave you the two subdivisions of the first. I talked about this on the program earlier when I tell you about A Strange Life. I actually told you about 1996 when W.B. Grant, who used to run the Eagle's Nest in Dallas, got caught with tax evasion, and he bought a little black a preacher out of West Virginia in and sold that church to them, and the company that I was working with that happened to be black owned decided to get up to do the work in there, and it was just the building that was just in a coach's condition. But my point is, this brother is telling you how they raise up black preachers is a national network. This is not just a one-off. It happened in Crystal City in California. It happened in Alabama. It happened in Atlanta. It happened in Dallas. Every major city has some black pastor. That's why when you talked about the Word Church last week, I was sitting here laughing to myself saying, it's all connected. More power to you, brother. I'm going to make sure you have the contact numbers and stuff because I'd like to reach out to you later.
Thank you for your call, sir.
Yeah. Let me respond to that.
Mm-hmm.
I can hear the audio was a little distorted.
Yeah.
But earlier I said that the Bible is always been about white supremacy. When black people go to church, the preacher never tells them to open their Bible to the book of Ethiopians or Kenyans or Malians or Ghanaians. They say turn to Romans, turn to Corinthians, which is Greek, turn to Galatians, which is Greek. See, when the Europeans conquered indigenous people, the first thing they did was plant the cross in the ground. And when you believe in a supreme being, like I said earlier, it's not only a seamless transition to believe in supreme human beings, but when you believe in a God, you bring your baggage into that belief, your personal experiences, your fears, your culture, your bias, your bigotry, your prejudices, your stereotypes, and your ignorance into that belief. If it weren't for the Bible, we all would think freely because we're all different. But how is it that we're all encouraged to believe in the same monotheistic, you know, scary, authoritarian, dictating, demanding, judgmental character in a book? One caller said that, what did he say? We need a God, you know, lead this God, lead by example. You cannot read the Bible. It is impossible. And come out and say, oh, what a wonderful book. Oh, that was such a great book. That God is the most murdering, judgmental. You're talking about, you're mad at the police for being trigger happy. The God of the Bible will kill you for the slightest offenses. When you say God is good, my next question is, which one are you talking about? Because if you're talking about the God of the Bible, I know you haven't read the book. There's a man, I can't remember his name. You can Google it, though. He chronologically listed the murders of the Bible. 25 million people this guy killed. You can get put to death for wearing different clothing materials. If you're homosexual, if you, committed adultery, if you talk back to your parents, whatever, the slightest offenses. And you talk about God is good? Which one are you talking about? Because there are millions upon millions. You know, here it is. You got a God. I think another caller mentioned this about this trials that this God went through, this Jesus went through. He basically had a bad weekend. You got your ancestors that had bad lives, born into slavery and died in chattel slavery. And you have no sympathy for them. Here's a character in a book that you've never seen, that you claim to love. This is crazy.
Okay.
But you have a beef with your family members, a beef with your friends, a beef with your neighbor, but you love this God that you've never seen. How do you love something that you're so afraid of? You know, and like I said, it's belief-based. You got a God that'll send you to hell because you don't believe in him. Look, if you're talking about the Amber Geiger case, okay? If we were a jury is supposed to make their decisions based upon, you know, a bevy of evidence based upon facts beyond a reasonable doubt. They're certain. If you were to question whether there is this God that people claim there is, especially black people, you would have so much reasonable doubt based off of the empirical evidence that you could not accept that belief without any proof. You just couldn't. There'd be too much reasonable doubt. But you don't apply that outside of the church. You only apply thinking like this in the courtroom. And once you come out the court, you go to this whole magical game again called Christianity. It's devastating to black people. And if you keep living by faith, you're going to die by it too. Faith is false it stands for false advertisement in the head. So now you look at it where this world now has turned real technical. And you are still living in the dark ages. You know nothing about your belief. You don't know where it came from. You ask a Baptist, where did that come from? They can't tell you. Who started this? They can't tell you. They don't know that Christianity is a legacy that has fostered sexism, racism, intolerance of difference. They don't know that throughout the history of Christianity, that it has a disregard for human freedom, for human dignity, for self-determination. And it has always been about controlling, containing, and confining human beings. It's always had a relationship with the government. Christianity, came to wield wide political power because they adapted their Christianity to appeal to the Roman government, and they won unprecedented authority and privilege. You still find that to this day.
And still does, yes.
You have a 501c3. It might be 3C. I always get that wrong. Whatever. We know it's tax exempt. Why aren't you paying taxes? Why do you still... In 394, Constantine excused clergy from paying taxes. That's still going on to this day. The same church that almost wiped out all of education, medicine, history, art, science, and they amassed an enormous amount of wealth where the rest of society just, you know, suffered and kept believing. That's still happening to this day. You have more money in the Vatican. The Vatican could write a check and solve the world's problems. They're not going to do it. But here it is. You are loyal to this belief and you're ignorant about it. You don't know anything about it. Someone asks you about the Crusades, you don't know anything. Someone asks you about the Inquisitions, you don't know anything. Someone asks you about Orthodox Christianity, you don't know anything. Someone asks you about the Counter-Reformation, you don't know anything.
Well,
but yet you believe in this devil. You accept the idea, the notion that there's some devil that you're going to encounter if you don't sit up straight and make sure that you're prepared. Nobody believes that, because if you thought that there was a God that was been dead for 2,000 years, he going to come back and rescue you after he arose from if you really believe that he could come at any hour, your stuff would never be raggedy. He would never catch you walking around the seats. You would always be in them. You know, like musical chairs, you wouldn't be caught doing what you do, but you can't help doing what you do because it's human nature. To have sex before a piece of paper is human nature. Kanye West said that he wanted his congregation, his people that were working on his newest holy album that just came out, not to have sex while they were working on this, not to have premarital sex. And you're going to have black folk run out. See, he lost you when he was with Trump. So he turned a lot of black folk off. But he knew how to get you back. All he got to do is become religious now. Him and young folk like Chance the rapper. Now, he's probably a very intelligent young man. I don't think he's as mentally disturbed as Kanye is. Chance, he seems like a very respectful young man. He's recently got married. I'm sure I would like him. All I'm saying is, son, listen, man, you're young. You haven't studied. You haven't researched. Please don't spread this slave Christian religion to people without knowing the facts. Please get some more understanding before you start promulgating and proselytizing to people. You're not there yet, son. You're in your 20s. Wait till you have some life tenure. Wait till you've researched. Wait till you found the 21 or 22, probably more. I'm up to about 19 or 20 saviors with the same story as Jesus. Mama named Mary, or had a derivative of the word Mary, died on the cross, called themselves the light of the world, ascended to heaven, had 12 disciples, et cetera, et cetera. These are old world motifs that have existed long before Christianity ever emerged on the scene. It's very old. There's nothing new about these things. So all I'm saying is to Kanye and Chance the Rapper is, please understand that we're trying to take a step forward. And you guys, with your celebrity, are taking us right backwards again. You don't know enough to do this. You got to, you know, get some knowledge. We all have been called to some type of adventure, Brother Richard, Brother Elliot. And I think it was Joseph Campbell that called it the hero's journey. Well, we're called to an adventure. We got some type of aid. We reach a threshold in our life where things have got to change. I don't care whether it's smoking cigarettes or drinking alcohol or on drugs or in a bad relationship, whatever, but we all reach that threshold. And then we all get challenged and we all get tempted to do certain things. And then we reach that bottom, that pit, that abyss. We all have been there. And then we start to transform. We grow wings. And we start to transform. And we encounter some sense of atonement. We atone for all the wrong that we've done. I don't care. That's in the 12-step program, which is a religious thing. But, hey, whatever you need to do to get off that dope, do it. And then you return and you share what you've gone through with the people. That's a hero's and a she-ro's journey. That doesn't mean you take it and go pimp the people until your story is no more fascinating than something than any other.
Okay.
I could sit up here and tell you about my story. I think it's fascinating how I almost died 3 times. Brother Richard, you can tell me the same thing. Brother Ellie, I know you can tell me the same thing where you've had some close encounters, some things happen to you. You know what that's called? It's called life. It's called tenure. Now, why should I exploit that?
The one thing that gets me, you know, in this and all these things being true, and it's 2 points that really is important, because those of us who are the outsiders, the challenge, as I hear what you're saying, is in how we are implementing this example, wealth building example, power building example, social network building example, to be the alternative. Because you have to have a visible alternative for people to see if they're not being reasonable, what is the reasonable thing to do? If we are not being able to show, if we can only describe what they're doing wrong, but not show what we can do right as the alternative, that raises another question, especially those of us who are looking at our African lineage, who can be able to expound on historical understanding of the Christian origin, as we heard in the
in the promo that Elliot pulled as far as Dr. Clark saying all the major religions come out of Africa. And we understand how white supremacy and white hegemony works. So it gets, because the American society in general, as y'all described, even in the making of these ministers and that are going into these churches, it is a factory. And the factory purpose is to be able to control its stock, fleece it and control it. And all of that is normal. Then again, it's doing effectively what it's supposed to do. So that's not the challenge, that it's doing effectively what it's supposed to do. The challenge is, as we observe how it's doing it, and we're in a society that's also doing it, because they're getting their cues. And I like, Elliot, when you raise about the Virginia company. Well, America is a company. I think they said, the guy from Ford said, the business of America is business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and in business, one thing you do is you make people buy something they don't want, especially in America. That's called marketing. And now they tell us the thing that you want them to do to get them to buy something they don't want, you brand it. You give it an image. It has no substance and it has no benefit for them. So I see that in these Christian ministers, their role, especially, and again, go back to what said as far as the transition of an educational minister of 1950 to now, because you see, as Black people got more income and was generating more wealth in that era, that these church leaders changed from being leaders in the community to these now prosperity ministers. And again, they're effective. I mean, what's that? Churches just put out or one of them just put out a chicken sandwich. And how many lines I seen Black people buying, standing in line to buy fried chicken? Huh?
Was it a pastor did that?
The methodology oh, yeah, of right, marketing right, the right, chicken right. is the same as the pastor. Same.
Exactly. Now, you said this, though. We got to show them an alternative. All right, now, the alternative is not rocket science. None of us are prepared to go to rocket science school as an alternative. But I would not, you know, I'm not in the position to tell grown folk what they need to be doing. I can suggest some things. I say that because everybody's situation is different. So you need to do what would correct your own situation. But there are simple things that you can do as Black people that would change our course very fast and very effectively. First thing you need to do, stop littering. When you finish with that pack of Newports, put it in your pocket till you get home. Stop littering. The whole perception of Black people would change. The perception of yourself would change when you walk into communities that look good, that are not inundated with trash. That's not rocket science. These are simple things. Stop littering. Second thing, you know, give 10% of what you have been given to the church, put it to your child's tutoring, or put it to yourself. Give yourself 10%. Pay yourself. The first law of building wealth is to pay yourself. Give yourself that money that you're giving that preacher and see how your money starts to grow. So a lot of Black people make a lot of money. Pay yourself and see what happens when you need that money. Embrace knowledge, not belief. Belief is an acceptance that something is true based off of what you heard or read or what somebody told you. Okay? Understand that if you want to have purpose in your life, do something purposeful. If you want meaning in your life, do something meaningful. You are the orchestrator of your life, the principal architect of your life. Whatever you want, study that. Study that craft to get what you want to achieve. Study it and realize that the person sitting next to you,
the person living in your home. These are going to be your biggest allies. It's about humanism. These things are not rocket science things that we could do as a people. The best thing that black folk could do for black people is to be correct themselves, to be take care of themselves, make sure their house is in order. That's simple. It's not, I didn't tell you to go to school and study this or study that. I didn't say all of that. Make sure you're together, but you will do all of those things. Your brain will naturally do that once you get out of religion because it's no longer perverted. A perverted brain does not even know what to do. It really doesn't. A perverted brain has no sense that I just threw, like I saw a woman on I-20 here in Atlanta. I could have chased her down, but people are crazy nowadays. She threw a styrofoam how you go, you're in a picnic, and you have, you know, the lid that closes, you get a to-go box at a restaurant. Mm-hmm. She threw it out the window. I saw a black man who worked for the government down in Midtown here in Atlanta throw a big gulp cup out the window. I pulled up next to him. I said, brother, why'd you do that? Why did you do that? A dog has sense enough not to poop near his house. And he looked at me and said, brother, you right. He said, you right. It was a black neighborhood. I wonder what he had done that in a white neighborhood. I doubt it.
Mm-hmm.
I doubt it. I really doubt it. All the forgiveness that we're seeing, I wonder would Botham Jean's brother forgive a black, if it was a black person who did that. That's called Stockholm Syndrome. We're in love with our kidnappers. Our brain has flipped. And that's, see, this is what religion does. It flips your thinking. Because it's misleading. It's like magic. It's misleading. It gets you to think along the wrong grooves. In fact, you don't even think. You believe. So these are some simple things. If you want more complex things to do, get some experts on the show for some complexity. I can show you complexity in my area. Maybe I can show you how to, you know, so show you some things on the piano, or maybe show you some things in business or whatever. But we're not, everybody's not striving for that. We're just talking about a sane society that doesn't poop where they live. A sane society that can own some businesses that they frequent. It's real simple stuff. But your thinking is skewed and tarnished and blemished. Because you have this notion of a supreme being that's going to come and do all the work for you. You let go of religion, bury religion, and then you will resurrect.
Brother Kamara, I want to thank you for being with us and conversating about this issue. I'm not like the brother that called. He said he'd seen all 50 of the slave sermons. I haven't seen all 50, but I'm quite sure once I see him, we'll be calling you back to come on, because this is a topic that needs to be talked about. And it needs to be talked about regularly, because
just
like you mentioned before, they have service on Sunday and Wednesday. They're in study, sometimes Thursday. Sometimes these places go all week with programming. That's how we're going to make a impact, Richard, by doing what we do. Put this information
right
out there. Brother Kamara is putting the information out there. So
chattel slavery is over with. Right.
Yeah.
Chattel slavery is over. We still might have some. Chattel slavery is over. You don't have to keep doing church like that. It's over. You got to evolve. We have to evolve, brother. We got to evolve there.
I want to thank you for being with us, and we'll talk soon.
All right. I want to tell the people.
Go ahead. Yeah. Give me. Yeah. Yes. I'm sorry.
Please visit jeremiahkamara.com. You can join our mailing list. You can email me at slavesermons.com. That's plural, slavesermons.com. You can join me on YouTube for my slave sermons and other videos. Just put in Jeremiah Kamara and all kind of stuff. It's going to come up, Camara. So, brother,
now can they get the book? Can they get the books and the some of the DVD?
Yes, sir. You get everything. You get the books and the DVD. Now, this new film I have coming out, I don't know what platform it's going to be on yet.
Okay.
But I'm very proud to say that we were a finalist in the Los Angeles Liftoff Festival. The name of the film is Holy Hierarchy: The Religious Roots of Racism in America. So stay tuned for that. I really appreciate this opportunity. Thank you for having on. I want to thank Brother Carl Nelson for hooking us up, getting us together, and I hope this is not the last time. Anytime you want to talk, just reach out to me. It's my honor, and I appreciate it.
I'll be in touch, brother. Thank you.
Take care now.
All right, brother. Thank you.
Richard, interesting conversation, yes, man. And yeah. I like what you said about how can we implement. You use a different term. What's the alternative? And it goes to something that we talked about Friday with Brother Jihad of the Acres of Diamonds program and what they were doing at the Horton Reed High School with establishing the environment of peace. And he was scratching his head saying he don't know what it's going to take for our people to realize that we're in a state of emergency with this violence that's happening in these communities. And how he invited pastors out to the Horton Reed High School. I guess a few came. He didn't mention. He mentioned more community groups. But he didn't. You notice he didn't mention politicians or clergy.
No.
See, that, Richard, that, you know, we can do what we can do as far as being on here, putting out the information and getting involved in some of these community groups. And Brother Kamara is doing what he can do. But until we break that hold that some of these people, and he harps on the religion, and I can't say that I disagree with him because it's crippling our people, man. And not just Christianity. You know, he was harping on that because that I think that has done the most damage. And this is me personally saying this.
Mm-hmm.
But these religion, especially what we have done here in this diaspora, has crippled our people. Because some of our people don't move because in the back of their mind, they figure, well, you know, God's going to handle this. You know, if we pray and we pray together, that God is going to deal with this. And you know it. You know it, Richard.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't, you know, the best we can do is just keep hammering at that wall, hammering at that wall, and it's going to crack sooner or later. Because we can't, you know, when Brother Kamara kept saying this is insane, he is right, man. You got this violence that's off the hook. And some, I'm not talking about what these white folks have been doing against us because we know what they've been doing is historical. That's what they do. So when these cops come in the neighborhood and do this, and not saying that we ain't supposed to fight back, we're supposed to do that. We don't let nobody take advantage of us. But I'm talking about the violence in our communities that's perpetrated by others that look like us. We could do something about this, and we can do more than what we're doing. And some of these religious institutions, they got to do more. I mean, they're in there hooping and hollering, screaming, and taking people's 10%. You know, I had a brother in my place last week when I brought up about this stuff about this word network, because I told you I was talking to people randomly. Mm-hmm. Then this man jumps up and states about, oh, these people, pastors, they ain't nothing. They're right. That guy was right. They ain't nothing but pimps. And I was trying to twist the conversation. Because I know that that guy, I'm not defending any of those pastors that he was talking about. The point I was raising about the people that are listening to that network shouldn't be disrespected and they should do something about it. But he turned the conversation to pastors. And I was wondering to myself, why would he do this? Because this man I was talking to was an average churchgoer. And you know what he told me, Richard? He said, man, my pastor, he ain't nothing. He fits that bill. He said, I give over $600 a month in tithes to my church. Now, for some people, that's more than a mortgage for some folks.
Right.
And then he said, and then I nearly fell out my own chair. He said, I paid the electric bill to the church last month. It was $800. I said, well, why did you do that? I said, didn't you just tell me that you pay over $600 a month in tithes to your church? Why would you pay the electric bill? Well, you know, this guy knows that I got some money, and the pastor, and he asked him, would he do this for the members of the church? I mean, I just couldn't believe it. And he did it.
Right.
And he did it, Richard. And then complain afterwards. If that ain't, you know, if that ain't more than what the brother's talking about, that's insanity. Mm-hmm. Why would you do that? You can't figure out something more to do with $800, $600, period. Or $800 of your money you paid an electric bill to the church, for the church. This insanity has got to stop. And I don't know any way else to do it besides put information out there. I can't, listen, that Jesus that the people claim to believe in, according to the text, he kicked the church doors open, went in there and overturned tables and started throwing and physically handling people. Now, I can't do that. I don't want to kick no church door open and go in there and start turning some pews over. But maybe that's what it's going to take.
Mm.
I don't know. All we can do is put information out there and let the people make their own decision. Our people are not stupid. Even some of us, even though some of our people act like they're in a trance, especially when you talk about some of these pastors, they act like they're in a trance.
Mm.
I mean, you got a guy, you know, he was talking about the guy that took over that Jamal Bryant, Eddie Long's church. That's still a mega church. You got a guy that was a pastor of that church that was uncovered to be sleeping and sexually abusing young boys. He shouldn't have had no members of that church. And how can you justify that? This guy was still a pastor of that church until he kicked the bucket. This guy was a sexual abuser of boys, Richard.
Mm-hmm.
Man. We can just do the best we can, man. Put information out there on various subjects and let the people hear it. And then hopefully, especially things that deal with a church, like that information about that network, that if you go into churches and take a poll, the majority of these church members watch that network.
Mm.
We can just put the information out there and then let the people do, what they see fit. Before we leave tonight, I just want to give the lineup Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. African Perspectives with Brother Oshie. Always interesting dialogue on African Perspectives from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. After him, Black People's Matrix with Brother Franklin Jones from 1 to 3 on Mondays and Wednesdays. On Monday evening, 6 to 8, Acres of Diamonds with Brother Jihad Ahmed. Tune in and catch Jihad's program 6 to 8 on Time for an Awakening. Next week, it will be Operation Reparations and Cobra. Their program will be airing from 9 to 10 on Time for an Awakening. From 10 to 12, Warren Ballantyne's program. He was on hiatus last week, moving back and forth, and he had some best of programs. I didn't want to air the reruns, but he'll be back on his regular schedule from 10 to 12 on Time for an Awakening, Mondays, Wednesdays, Mondays through Fridays. Tuesday, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers from 8 to 10 on Time for an Awakening Media, or on Wednesday, Revive with Sister POC, and I think she'll be back with regular airings of our program the first week in November. She'd had a little mishap, tore her Achilles, but she'll be up and moving around and doing her program and back on the grind with her Revive program from 8 to 10 on Wednesday on Time for Awakening Media. 7 to 8, Relationships with Joy and Troy on Time for an Awakening Media. And then on Fridays, Time for an Awakening is back from 8 to 10 on Friday evenings. I want to thank everybody for listening to the program this evening. Lively discussion, as always, and we'll be back on Friday, Lord willing, to continue on this path towards an awakening. Peace.
Peace.
If
you're driving through the country on a lazy afternoon. Or you're watching your children playing after school. They seem to be so unaware of, I know, the things that they'll soon have to take care of. We've got to do something, yeah, to save the children.
To save the children.